Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to the podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are on iTunes, which is the most efficient way. Just enter Lord Gaul or enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. Going to be a shorter show today, but there's definitely a lot of good things that I wanted to talk about. I want to have a summer series where I just kind of go through the top 10 in every weight class. I'm going to bounce around. I'm not going to go from the smallest weight class to the biggest weight class. I'm going to have a little fun, and I'm going to go ahead and start with the featherweights, people who are around that 143-pound range. And I really want to break down the athletes in the division, break down the people who we should be talking about for the future. I'll go ahead and use some examples, from Liverkick, for example. Going to hit them up and use a lot of the guys that they have in their top 10. I'll probably give you about 11 names for each, so 10 plus 1. But I'm going to go ahead and make this a summer series thing. I am going to do a state of the game, maybe next week or the week after that. I'm going to do an episode where I'm just going to break down what's going on in the world of kickboxing and Muay Thai, but I just want to give a top 10 breakdown. Predominantly, this will be a kickboxing list. It's so much tougher to gauge full rules Muay Thai on an international level as far as who gets ranked where, who'd you beat. Like, it's harder when I don't get that body of work where they get to fight each other on a regular basis, like kickboxing organizations, whether it be Glory or K1 in the past. They give me a much better or a healthier sample size that I could go off of. I've got much more of those elite athletes fighting each other than I do in high-level full rules Muay Thai, despite the fact that I do have really good high-level full rules Muay Thai. And I'll go ahead and mention a couple names there for this division. But really, I want to focus on the guys who I think will fight each other on a regular basis because their promotions open up that opportunity. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into it. I'm going to go ahead and go with the featherweights. And after I do that, I'll go ahead and mention a couple of the fights from Kunlun or whatever. But we're going to have a lot of fun in this one. So I'm going to go ahead and go off the top. I'm going to start with who Liverkick has ranked as their number 10 guy, and Zakaria Zoghori. And this is a name who's Zakaria Zoghori is a guy who no one knew who he was at all, period, in the international scene until he fought shootboxing. And in the shootboxing tournament, he came in as an alternate, and he was able to get one of the coolest step back hook KOs that you're ever going to see against, Kareem Panui. And in that fight, okay, everybody realized that he had the combination style, and brings it as far as his hands to kick flow. It's really, really fluid. But then in the final, he goes against Hiroki Suzuki. And what could, without question, is the robbery of the year. If you're looking at what happened in those first three rounds, they were clearly Zoghori's rounds. His kickboxing flow was just absolutely dominant. His movement was really good. He scored with his hands clean. And even if Suzuki threw at him in spots, he was able to bite down his mouthpiece and come back with his own combination. After three rounds, it was an easy 30-27 decision. Somehow it goes to an extra round, and in the extra frame, I don't know if it was one extra frame or two extra frames, but in the extra frame, Suzuki's able to score a standing eight. I can't remember if it was an official down at this period of time, but he gets a standing eight call right at the end of the round, and that gets him the title. I look back on that, and Zoghori has since fought for the promotion and won again since then. He's got a good international style. Glory should definitely consider this guy. He brings the action. He's the kind of athlete that you want to see in terms of his hands to kick flow. You hear that a lot with Robin Van Roosmalen, where it's like, if this guy's your best guy, the way he throws his combinations, the way he throws the flow between his hands and his feet, he's the kind of guy that you want to see fighting on a regular basis at the highest level. So I'm definitely excited to see him perform. I'm definitely hoping to see more of him as an athlete. But he's got to be mentioned for sure as one of the best featherweights in the world. Zakaria Zoghori, fighting out of Holland. I don't know where his original origins are, but I know that Holland is where he makes his home as of now. Speaking of the Hiroaki Suzuki, go ahead and jump into him next. Liverkick's got him at number 9, but shootboxing, to me, will still be a prestigious title to win. The field changes throughout. When I say prestigious, it just means that it's a cool belt to have. You know, like there's a lot of international belts out there. You could pretty much be a title holder just off of the based off of the promoter or the promotion you fight for. But suit boxing, it's a tournament. At minimum, you've got to earn something, you know. And despite the fact that I didn't like the decision, he did win that extra round. He did score that down. And he is a person that they're pushing the brand on because, let's be honest, shoot boxing is, even though they're starting to get a connection with Hong Kong, they're starting to get some gyms down there. Australia's got some people who are trying to put on some shows in their area. We are not seeing a consistent brand of, you know, shoot boxing outside of the scene in Japan. And the idea that they've got a Japanese star to push that is very, very important. And I look back, you know, at, you know, like fighters like Ogata, for example, and he finally got the year where he's able to get past Andy Sauer. Overall, it's good for them to have a Japanese champion. And at this particular weight class where they have stronger fighters, the smaller the weights, the better the opportunity is for the Japanese athletes. I really thought that Suzuki is the kind of person that you can build the brand on. He does have a pretty entertaining style when he lets his hands go. I feel that there are times where he's like letting it breathe a little bit too much, but when he's active and he lets his hands go, he can score some pretty cool KOs. And his stoppage of, I want to say it's Bovey off the top of my head, that was a pretty mean one. He's just the kind of guy I want to see compete. So definitely hoping that I get more from Suzuki moving forward. Good athlete, good fighter. We'll see what they do with him moving forward because he's going to have to defend that title every 2 years. I don't know if his weight class is every year, but we know that he's going to get the opportunity to fight other international fighters, and I'm hoping that they continue to push him. I'm going to go ahead and talk about Liam Harrison next. Liam Harrison is currently not on the featherweight list. Liam Harrison is a guy who's been fighting majority full rules Muay Thai. He's fighting again full rules Muay Thai in a couple weeks here in Line Fight in America, where he's going to go against Malapet, who I have him winning, you know, in my mind, I have him winning quite easily because I feel like he's that much of a superior fighter. But you never know. You got to let the athletes turn it, you know, make it happen. But this is a guy who his only international loss in full rules Muay Thai was in a 3-round fight with Muhammad Kamal. And that's a fight that, you know, to this day, he very much argues and debates the decision of that one. He's not a big fan of that decision. But overall, we're talking about a guy who I watched him lose in low kicks to he lost in low kicks to Anawat, and Anawat, of course, was the Thai legend who was known for his KO power. I watched that fight in Jamaica live, and he came out with the low kick game, and he's able to get him. When they fought again, it was a completely different Liam Harrison. Mentality was different. Everything was different. He's able to get the 5-round decision over Anawat. And you look at his history. You look at how, you know, he loses to Sanchai, does better, goes in the next outing, goes against him again. He doesn't shy from the best fighters in the world. He's looking for the opportunity to go against the best and the most elite Thais internationally. He's pretty much brought in everybody, wins over, you know, Kulabin. And, you know, I really think that he is a guy who, and he's fought kickboxing. And despite the fact that he lost to Masaki Nori, he was winning the fight before he, you know, took that big knee that caused the big cut over his eye. But he's got great international kickboxing skills. I'm excited to see him fight again live here in a couple weeks. He's the kind of guy that you want to see. All action, brings the fight. Work rate is good in every round from the beginning to the end. Really strong with the sweep, strong with his low kick game. Expect that to get going good and early. I'm excited to see him perform again. Liam Harrison, definitely a guy to watch. Going to go ahead and go back into a guy who people might know because he is on the featherweight list and he's been fighting at this weight class for a while, Mousab Imrani. Mousab Imrani brings the combination flow. Very, very good fighter, very exciting fighter. Lost to Gabriel Varga in a very, very close fight. As I mentioned before, I had it a draw when they fought, and I thought that I think the third round was my draw round, but I think I had Mousab Imrani winning early, Gabriel Varga winning late, and I could see Varga winning that third round if I was forced to choose it. But I did have it even. I had first two to Imrani, last two to Varga. middle round was, third round was my tie. But Masab Amrani is a guy that you want in kickboxing, period. He's put up legendary performances. He's immortalized in the sport because of his fight with Muhammad Kamal. It's probably considered the second best fight in the last 15 years. Of course, you know, number one going to Mike Zambides, who is having his retirement fight this weekend against Steve Moxon. But when Mike Zambides met Shahid, that's still considered the standard. I will still go somewhere on my Facebook wall, scroll down that wall, and I'll see, gotta watch this fight, or this is epic, or best fight ever, or something like that will be in the tagline. And then I won't even need to see the video clip start. I'll know automatically that they're talking about Mike Zambides and Shahid Al-Hawaj. In that way, the hardcores know that, and the crowd audience adds to it and everything. Masab Amrani and Muhammad Kamal are Moody Kamal, one of the best fights you're ever going to see. So because of his style, you know he's going to bring it. You know he's that kind of athlete. He came out and he got a victory over Yuta Kubo, who, of course, was considered one of the best of the weight class. He lost to Masaki Nori, but, man, he's still doing good stuff with his combination flow. A lot of people had that fight close. Masab Amrani, he's got a good style about him. He just, when I first met him, you know, it's when he beat Anuwat. He had a real long entrance, and I was like, all right, what am I about to see from this guy, whatever. But because Anuwat tries to play the game with the hands, Anuwat was knocking people out when he's fighting at 126, 130. When he was going against Masab Amrani trying to play that game, it worked in Amrani's favor, because that's what they do in the West, and especially that's what they do in Holland with the combination and the kick flow. Masab Amrani is one of the elite athletes in kickboxing, very entertaining fighter. It's crazy to think that the Kamal fight was at 70 kgs. He's back where he needs to be, around 143 pounds, which is what I think we're talking about. 63 kgs, something like that, you know, or around that 64, 63, 62 kg, you know, range is where he's been fighting consistently. That's where he needs to be. And I really like Masab Amrani. I like his skill set. He's just a guy that you want to see in kickboxing. You want to see him. And it should be a star type performance. They need to bring him over to the States and give him the right kind of matchup, because if people watch this guy from the audience, they will remember him. He has that type of all-action combination style. Gabriel Varga is a guy who I first, you know, came in contact with. He only had a few videos online, only had a few things online for me to follow. He had a small highlight and so on. But the first time I got introduced to him was when he fought in K1, and he went against Lardzilla, and he was able to get that, you know, despite the fact that Lardzilla was fighting up, he's able to get the decision. Lardzilla was doing all that flash, jumping kicks, no substance. Varga brought that heat to him, brought that pressure, let his hands go, scored really, really well in close and from a distance. But it didn't look good doing it because the ties, you know, if they're not, it's not going their way, they're looking to clinch, they're looking to, you know, play a distance game. And this particular, you know, if you're oversized, they've got to find another way to make it happen, because he's used to being a slick guy, unlike a Sitichai, who's used to being, I can be both, but more than anything, Sitichai's trying to kill you, you know, Jotunheim's trying to kill you. A lot of the tides come out and they play kind of more of the game, like a Sayok, like plays the game a little bit. And Lardzilla plays the game, but he's got some flash. He'll do like a jumping kick here and there, and that's kind of what draws people to him. Gabriel Varga was able to cut all that off, but in doing so, he didn't look in a way where I'm like, okay, I want to see this guy fight more and more. But the fights that came afterwards, you know, especially some of his fights in Glory, he is a very entertaining guy to watch. I like his style. He's got good length, good combination to kick flow. He's very proud to be the Glory champion. He put on a great performance against Masab Amrani. He is from Canada, where right now Canada is doing a really good job, especially for North America, of producing. They're figuring out how to make it happen in practice, because you don't have the most fights in the world here. And whatever the system that they've got going on, you know, he has been able to put the flow together, been able to get his combinations and kick flow going. He's a star that you want to watch moving forward. I'm excited. I can't wait for them to announce. Hopefully he's going to defend his title in September. I'm hoping that they're trying to get him on a schedule where he fights three times a year. Or my goal for Glory would be for them to keep doing how they're doing. Have a title holder defend here every month, every other month, and so on. But at the end of the year, maybe you have like four or five title fights on one card. You know, like, there should always be a bang to the end of the kickboxing season. And we're used to having Glory be that bang. But let's go to Japan. Let's have, you know, go old school, go K-1 back in the late 90s, have some five-rounders, and really focus on a card that puts together several title fights. People are going to watch. That's going to be a very, very entertaining, you know. And they could do it. You know, they could still do it in their two. They're usually getting about 2.5 hour slot. So maybe at the end of the year they have Varga and, you know, Rusmal, and, you know, if Holtkin's the title holder or something like that, whatever. Have all those guys defend, and of course the heavyweight defend, and Rico Vahirvin. But have like four or five title fights on a big card at the end of the year. I think that that kind of would be the platform that would really let people know who Gabriel Varga is. So defend his title in September, hopefully fight again in December. Next person I'm going to mention is Yuta Kubo. Yuta Kubo is a very slick southpaw kickboxer who's got some good wins. He had Masaki Nori's number for a while. He won the 63.5 kg tournament where he beat Tatsuya Yamada. Was one of the victories that he had in that. He, of course, got victory over, there's Nori. Who am I forgetting? Well, he was the first inaugural Glory champion. I'm just forgetting who he won and who he beat in the first round of that tournament. But Yuta Kubo is a guy who I look at him, I look at his resume, and I say, okay, you're one of the elites. But because of some recent events, like his fights with Yosomi Soda, who seems like he's got his number a little bit, Kubo is in a weird place where he's trying to, and I believe that was a little bit lighter in weight. That might have been at 60 kgs. I can't remember exactly. But Yuta Kubo is a guy who, despite his loss to Kufertix, despite his loss to Soda, he is in his home, at home, in that top 10. Like, he's a guy who, you get a win over him, that's a big-time win. And I think that he's a guy that you want to be watching as he moves forward. He's slicker than he is powerful. Like, he doesn't really have the strongest KO pop, but because he's really slick with his left hand, really slick with his step-back hook, he can get his kicks going, he can play in space pretty good. He is a guy that you want to watch moving forward. He at times can be a little bit too tentative, a little bit too the defensive part of Georgia Petrosian without the offensive part of Georgia Petrosian as far as how he works his southpaw style. But I really think that he's a good kickboxer. And despite the fact that guys, and he'll always struggle with guys who've got a little bit of KO pop and bring a little bit more aggression, if Kubo can keep the fight at a pace where he's not dealing with the hooks of Emirani, or he's not dealing with guys who kind of have that that work rate that he can't handle, he's going to be tough for anybody. And even if you do have that style, he's going to be tough for you. So definitely looking forward to see what goes on, what happens moving forward with Yuta Kubo. Going to go ahead and mention a guy who he's at 4 on Liver Kick because of his victory over Masaki Nori with Masaru Glunder. And that one's a big one for me. That one's a reach. And the reason why I feel like it's a reach, because Masaki Nori, that is his significant win. He doesn't have, I mean, and that is a huge win because it's, you know, it's Masaki Nori, who I'd still consider the best the weight class resume-wise. But it was a big-time win, and Masaki Nori, who got going slow, he played with his earmuffs up, and Glunder just kept being offensive, throwing big-time shots and getting his knee and his jumping knee up the middle, and it caused a cut on Nori, and Nori tried to keep pushing. And he scored when he let his hands go, but he just waited too long. And Glunder was able to take advantage of it, and, you know, Mike's Gym and a lot of people from Mike's Gym were posting, this is the kid to watch, this is the kid to watch. And Mike's got a couple of them with Elias Bilal, who I'm going to talk about when I talk about the 60kg weight class. He's got a couple guys, and Elias Bilal probably belongs here too. But Glunder is a talented guy that I'm only mentioning because he's in the featherweight top 10 for Liver Kick right now. I would like to see more resume wise from him, but he did have a very significant win. And it'd just be like, you know, if Buster Douglas wasn't ranked in the top 10 and then he just suddenly beat Mike Tyson one day, a top 10 list would look weird if you didn't put in a guy who got such a significant win. So I'm fine with him being in the list, but I'd still kind of, you know, have him more closer to 10 off of the one victory, because if you look at it, Nori, Kubo, Amrani, Varga, those guys have got wins off of other guys in the top 10, like more than one win off of other guys in the top 10. So Glunder being in the list, I'm fine, but I would, you know, wait on, you know, let's get some more resume from him. Hopefully he can fight in Infusion a couple times to fill that gap as opposed to just waiting for the K-1 opportunities. He's a talented guy, and I want to see more of him. Long, uses his length. He gets good generates good power on his thin frame, and he really mean with those knees and the jumping knees. Kuferatex is interesting because he should be number one on this list if it wasn't for the fact that he, you know, was took it down from Minoru Kimura. And that, of course, is a Brazilian fighter who is, I mean, he looks as, just looks like a typical Caucasian American, you know. But in truth, he's from Brazil, speaks Japanese, super fluent. He is becoming a star because he's got KO Pop. And I look at him and I look at, you know, Fairtex, who was winning that fight, winning the fight quite handily. And I still thought that he won the fight, despite the fact that Kimura found a down or scored a down on him late in that third round, which gave him the win on the cards. Fairtex is legit. His skill set's really good. His KO over Yuta Kubo was nasty. His victory over Soto was complete. He is a very, very good fighter, and he is going to be tough for anybody in the top 10 to beat, period. I'm glad that he's getting these international opportunities because he's a guy who he's been signed to Fairtex and has been fighting international probably for more than 10 years. And I'm not doubting if he's in his early 30s. I don't know what his age is. I think he's in his late 20s. But I just look at that and I go, man, this is a guy who we're going to be talking about for some time. He's a good athlete, good fighter, and I'm curious to see what they use him, you know, going forward. But they keep using him on that card. They keep bringing him out. He is the tie that they've chosen, and he's fighting in a way where he's being aggressive. He's letting his hands go. He's, like I said, the KO they caught Yuta Kubo with, they're both exchanging at the same time. So it's one of the cleanest hook KOs you're going to see. It's awesome stuff. I want to see him fight more. I would rank him near the top. He third's fine, you know, that they've got him as far as fair featherweight goes. It's just the fact that he's behind Kimura, despite, you know, even though Kimura beat him, just Kimura's resume, I'm still waiting to see on that. But good stuff by Kuferatex, southpaw. He's got aggressive with the hands, lets the body kick go clean, can play a low kick game if you bring it to him, but he's more a guy who he's been relying on the knees and the hands and the kick to keep you off balance. Kuferatex is a guy who I really want to continue to see in the weight class. I'm going to go ahead and mention, I guess I will go with Minoru Kimura next. And it's weird because even as I say his name, you know, I'm like laughing to myself. I'm like, all right, how am I going to go about figuring out this dude? You know, like what is the thing that he brings to the table that makes him a top two guy on the liver kick list? And first of all, as I mentioned before, he has got some insane KO power. Like, just it is, he can crack. Hiroya was having his way with him in the kickboxing. Every once in a while, Kimura Philip Minoru. Every once in a while, he would have a moment where he would throw some hands, but it didn't matter because he was just getting low kicked, and Hiroya would score low kicks, move close. But when he finally caught him, Hiroya was in trouble until he got the KO finally. Like, he's got that kind of change your life power, you know? And same thing with Kuferatex. Kuferatex was doing his thing, whatever. And then Kimura fought, you know, caught him and dropped him. And that was, there it is again. Change your life type of power. This guy can crack. I don't like him against, you know, some of the better guys in the world, you know, but he's, because of that KO power, he's always going to have a chance. And I mean always going to have a chance to upset a lot of the top guys. But I expect the more elite athletes, the Masaaki Noris, the, as I was saying before, the Yusomi Sodas of the world. Soda, of course, got that, you know, second round TKO finish where, you know, he kind of overwhelmed him and then he threw a bunch of knees, and that's kind of what, you know, ended the night for Kimura Philip Minoru. And I think that was, Minoru lost that one in the 65 kg tournament. And I think that was, I can't remember, I think it was in the first round of that tournament, if I'm remembering correctly. But man, I can't stress you enough how much he's got the KO power to keep him in this. So if he can get the kickboxing down, I think he can be a formidable guy. Plus, despite the fact that he is a foreigner, I keep calling him Kimura, and you know, or Philip as they call him. And despite being that, he's accepted by the Japanese audience and they really want to see him perform. So hopefully we'll see more stuff from him. He's a very good athlete, very good fighter. Next person I want to talk about is Kevin Ross. And Kevin Ross, again, full rules Muay Thai fighter. You know, full rules Muay Thai fighter at the weight class. And I only bring him up because of his significance to America. Because this is a guy who, if he does get the opportunity to fight in glory, there's a lot of guys who he can beat. He's a very, very tough fighter. Very good. But right now he's, you know, trying to get some significant international wins. Of course, he's coming off the loss to Tetsuya Yamada from the elbow. But he, because he's got the contract with Lion Fight, he's going to continue to get the opportunity to compete. Right now, I heard that, even though it doesn't look like it's going to happen from the Kevin Ross camp, in terms of where the fight happens, Yakao was trying to make the fight happen with him and Liam Harrison. I think that that would be an awesome fight, and the kind of fight that the international audience would really be drawn to. But I really take a step back and I just look at it and I go, man, who am I really drawn to? Who am I really impressed by in the Muay Thai world that can have success in the kickboxing world if they want to? And I do think that Kevin Ross, where clearly some of the best guys, just like any, like the best guys everywhere, are going to give him some trouble, but he's got a good all-action style. He can be hit, but he's just going to keep bringing that offense, in particular if he could be the bigger man. You know, like when he's the bigger, stronger guy, he doesn't fool around. He knows it and he pushes his advantages. Definitely good stuff. Kevin Ross, good fighter. I want to see more of him moving forward. Going to go ahead and, you know, I'll go ahead and go Yusumi Soda, who is Liverkick.com's number one guy. Soda's got some good quality wins, and he's got wins over Kubo. As I mentioned before, he is got the win over Kimura, as I mentioned before. He lost to Fairtex, but he's still a really, really good fighter. I've got no problem with him being number one. Very tough dude. I want to see more of him in future. You know, Galetzo's hands go, which is gonna, but he's got enough slickness to avoid shots as well. And he, again, because of the focus of 60, 65, 63, 55 kgs by the K1 brand, it's giving these guys the opportunity to have some shine that they couldn't have before. And Soda, you know, and Saki Nori, who I mentioned before, these guys are part of a list of guys who really could be something special if promoted the right way. And there was an era where it was all about the K1 heavyweights and 70 kgs. So you had to be close to or on your way to one of those weight classes, which is why sometimes bigger guys cut down, you know, like a Yuri Mess. And sometimes, you know, if you were around one, you know, 180 pounds, 190 pounds, you moved up, like Tyrone Spong, you know what I'm saying, who just was at 77 kgs and was like, you know, I'm going to go ahead and start working myself up towards heavyweight. I look at these guys and I look at these athletes and I go, man, the reason why, you know, they're forced to do this is because there was only two weight classes. But thanks to Glory focusing on this, you know, on featherweight weight class, thanks to K1 and its focus on the smaller weight classes, you're getting guys like Soda the opportunity to not only just win, but to also be a star, to be a draw, to have our audience. And I love the K1 videos and I love how they do the breakdowns. Definitely excited about seeing Yusumi Soda moving forward. Masaki Nori, I've been bringing him up before. I've been bringing him up in examples in other places. But Masaki Nori, man, his resume is fantastic in terms of, like I said, he used to struggle with Yuta Kubo. And then all of a sudden, he figured him out and he got the victory over Yuta Kubo. And that was after he'd gotten to the Glory final and lost to him. He was being competitive. He decided to bite down his mouthpiece in exchange, and Kudo dropped him in exchange. That 10-8 lost in the fight. Came back, I'm talking like 3 months later, that year. 3 months later that year, they fight in Crush, I believe it was, and Masaki Nori scored with his kicks, played the distance well, didn't allow too many clean scores in return, and he was able to get the victory there. Masaki Nori also gets a victory over Elias Bilal earlier this year. Belade earlier this year. We've got Gabriel Varga, you know, is a another guy who, I can't remember if I'm thinking, nope, it wasn't Varga, it's Masaba Mirani. He's got a victory over Masaba Mirani, got a victory over Liam Harrison, as I mentioned before. Masaki Nori is one of the best fighters in the world. And I look at this list and I go, Masaki Nori, if he fights any of those guys tomorrow, even the guys that he lost to, he'd be my favorite in those matchups. And the guy who I think is the biggest dark horse of the guys that I mentioned is Zakariah Zoghri. He's a guy who I really, really want to see. But those guys, these guys that I'm mentioning, and Masaki Nori, his style is so different than them. Really a kick-first guy. Like, he can bring his knees, his step-up knee is the meanest in the world. Like he brings it up so high. Even in the clinch, even if you're an over-and-under, he can bring that knee up and score well. Very, very talented young man. I'm really excited to see him. And I'm telling you, he's like 22 years old, 21 years old. Young, and that's what you want. You want the future of your sport to be young. And I'll go ahead and wrap up this weight class by talking about Ilias Belaid, because he could be in any of these weight classes. Again, he was a tougher one because I was trying to decide where I wanted to put him, if I wanted to put him on a different weight class show, because I am going to do 60 kgs and under. But I'm going to go ahead and put him in here as the last guy I talk about, which means I think I've talked about 13 for the weight class. But Ilias Belaid, Infusion's done a great job of moving him. Just watch any of his fights. Go to just put an Infusion Kickboxing, and Ilias Belaid fights will pop up. There is a style of Dutch-style kickboxing that's starting to emerge from Dutch-style pad holders. Lucien Corbin, if you've ever seen him hold pads before, he's one of the most original people with the pads and the angles and the things that he puts together and his combo flow. It's just absolutely insane. And I remember when I interviewed him for the documentary, he said, sometimes my students ask me where it comes from. He said, I don't know if it's from God or Allah or Buddha. He says, I don't know. He says, it just kind of comes to me. And he said, the student asked him the other day, he said, where did that combination come from? He said, I don't know. And really, if I look at that flow of how he does different things, there's a bunch of Dutch-style holders, like Nicky Holtzkin, for example, who just, they hold, Nicky Hemmers, for example, who hold the pads in a way where you continuously do combo flow. Look at Nicky Hemmers and Gokhan Saki back in the day. I'm talking about 9 years ago, 8 years ago. Look at them holding pads. Look at that flow. Look at a lot of the Dutch pad holders and look how much they hold it. They're long, continuous combination flows where it'll start with, it'll be something like 1-2, switch kick, cross hook, low kick, hook to your knee, like that long of a combination. And they'll keep doing it and they'll just keep adding onto the combo and keep adding onto the combo. And you hear it and you think, man, okay, they're just kind of teach you kickboxing flow. That's what they want. They want you to be in the rhythm of this strike to this strike. That way, when you get out there and fight, you're not thinking about it anymore. You only know combination flow. But there are people like Ilias Belaid and like Muhammad Uriah, these next generation of young stars, both guys 20 years old, or 21 years old, 19 years old, like around that range. And Ilias Belaid is a guy who is now fighting like those long combinations. So before, where it was just somebody does a combination kick on you, you combination kick back. That's what Dutch style is. You know, combination, the hands to the feet, the hands to the kicks, combinations to kick, combinations to kick. That's what people know Dutch style as. But if you watch the Dutch, there's so many different styles, different fighters, different coaches, and you're starting to see different styles emerge. People who've been watching it for a while have already known it. You know, the hardcores already know that it's not just combinations and kicks if you're in your Holland. But man, when I really watch, when I really break these athletes down, when I really break down Ilias Belaid and how he throws strikes, I'm convinced that because of those longer pad holding sessions, he has it in his mind that I can land all this stuff. So he doesn't go out there thinking that this is just pad holding, I'm never going to actually use it. He'll go out there and throw something with like 10 strikes in it. And that's why he's awesome. That's why Masaki Nori's awesome. He's got that flow too. But like for a Japanese fighter who's really a combination kick guy too, but he can just, Nori will do a combination that's got 7 kicks and 3 punches. You know, like, but Ilias Belaid is a guy who will do combination kick to switch knee and just he mixes it all up together. This is the future of your sport. Ilias Belaid, Masaki Nori, these are young fighters. Masaru Glunder is not even 20. Like these are the next stars of the sport. So be excited about the featherweight division. Keep watching it, and I'll continue to do this series throughout the summer. If you guys got a pick, go ahead and tweet me the pick or Facebook message me what weight class you think I should do next. But I'm going to go ahead and jump around. I don't want to go in order. I want to go lightweight, then welterweight next. I want to have some fun with it. So I'm glad you guys were able to get that breakdown, and I hope you enjoyed it. Going to go ahead and bring up a couple of results that I've gotten from over the past, just weekend. Just Kunlun had a couple fights. Noriko Keel gets a victory over Muhammad Dubey, or Deby. And Muhammad Deby is a guy I've mentioned in the show before. He's fought, and he's a French fighter who's been on the international scene for quite some time. Usually fights full rules Muay Thai. early in the fight, Enrico Keel's doing what Enrico Keel does. He's got really good combination flow, and when he lets his left kick go to the body, he scores it well. His left kick to the inside leg also scores well, but he pushes the pace, keeps his combination flow going. And Muhammad Dabi spent the majority of the round, counter kick control, landing a single kick here, landing a single kick here, or if he felt the body kick, he'd return an inside kick. He played that game consistently. Round two, Enrico Keel starts to build up on the offense, and then he scores and hurts Dabi to the body, puts together a series of offense, and Dabi goes down, but very significant, the ref missed it. The ref thought that, you know, it wasn't, you know, from the cause of, it was a knee, and he followed up with some hands, and then I think he went back to the knee before he went down, but when he went down, the ref came in and called it a slip, despite the fact that not only, you know, did I think that the score was clear, but he got up really, really slow. Like, I'm looking at him, and I'm like, okay, this guy, he didn't answer when you called him to get up. He's clearly in bad shape. But it was at the end of the round, he's able to get out of the round. Round three, early in the round, Enrico Keel's mouthpiece falls out. Gum shield for some of the other parts of the world. But it falls out, and then they put it back in, and they go back to working because he's tired. He's tired from a lot of the work. But after this, you know, work, after this, offense that he put in for two rounds, Dabi was a much more intentional with his kick returns. And he'd been able to score low kicks throughout the fight, but he was a lot more aggressive. He was landing single kicks in space, and he was able to build on it. In that, Enrico Keel got a little bit tired, and when he got tired, mouthpiece fell out again. And the ref, I guess I got two thoughts. One, I don't think I would have taken a point that quick, but I'm fine with it. But my favorite thing about it was the ref was fast about it. He didn't do that really long thing where you go to each corner and be like, 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. That takes forever. As soon as he picked him up, he said, 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. Pointed all three, took him over the corner, got the water in the mouthpiece, got it back in there. If you're going to do it fast. And I thought that he did a good job of that. Because of that 10-8, they called it even after three. And in the extra frame, Muhammad Dabi had a couple moments where he was trying to do the kick return, but Enrico Keel wasn't having it. This is a guy who, despite the fact that he lost to Georgia Petrosian earlier this year, he's been on a roll. And he's been fighting really well in the last year, year and a half. And he, you know, the reigning K-1 champion, if you will, is a guy who really turned it up, let his hands go, really aggressive with his offense in the next extra frame, and he rightfully won the extra round. The other fight I'm going to talk about, Artur Kashinko gets a victory over Valente, whose first name eludes me right now for some strange reason. But Artur Kashinko is a guy who did a great job of landing his combination flow. He builds off of his boxing more than anything. When you first saw him on the scene, I thought they did a good job of blending both together. Now I'm not as confident that he builds both as well. I feel like there's just and it's Dimitri Vellant. I think that he does a very good job of being offensive here in spots, being, you know, jab, cross hook, double hooks to the body. He works off his boxing and then finds sneaky, you know, knees and kicks in between. Sometimes just simple 1-2-3 or jab, cross hook, low kick, like very, very simple. But the one basic thing that Kashinko's had since he's been with Mike Jim in particular, anytime you throw at his lead leg, he likes to follow with the hook. Now, for those of you who watch MMA a lot, most of the time in MMA, if people attack, you know, go with the big low kick towards the lead leg, you more likely see a right hand. Because the reason why they throw that right hand is because they can throw it straight or they can throw it, swing over the top, grab onto the leg, finish a takedown. Even in kickboxing, people throw the straight right when they see the low kick a la Andy Sauer's loss to Abraham Aquini, that was what happened early in the fight. He was just able to get a, you know, he threw that right hand as Sauer was, you know, throwing a kick early in the second round, and that was the decider on the cards. Kashinko's always been a big fan of the hook. He always likes the hook off of that, and in this fight, Valente was able to score to the lead leg a couple times, but every single time he scored to the lead leg, he ate a body shot with the left hook, or he ate a single shot, or he ate a double left hook to the right hand. Like, Kashinko builds off of it well. And there's a thing that I call erasing it from the cards. Erasing it from the cards is essentially, if somebody lands something on you, you want to land on them two or three times. You want to make the refs and the judges completely forget, the judges in particular, you want to make the judges forget that you were scored on at all. And I really thought that Kachinko does a great job of anytime somebody gets a kick on him, he throws like four or five hands right away, three hands right away. He doesn't let that stir in the judges' mind at all. Not just that, but his slick movement, the way he's able to find his right hand, the way he doubles up on his jab, the way he picks where exchanges happen. Valente was never able to get going because it'd be like, Kachinko, I'm getting my offense, and then you're going to watch me walk around the cage. You're going to watch me walk over here, and you're going to get some more offense. Artur Kachinko is a very talented fighter, and even though he was scheduled to fight earlier this year, Nicky Holtzgen, a lot of people just thought that it was written in stone that Nicky Holtzgen was going to win. Kachinko's got a victory over him, and don't rule out his skill set. He's still a very good, very tough fighter. So, outside of that, last fight, of course, as I mentioned before, Steve Moxon's going to go against Mike Zambides in what will be Mike Zambides' retirement fight. This is Moxon's second fight over of elite fighter in the last, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. His last one coming in a charity event with Robert Van Roosmalen. I don't know how much he's carrying into that fight, but whatever it is, it's too much for Mike Zambides, who, this is an all-action fight. A lot of people were calling Steve Moxon the next Mike Zambides. It would be fitting if Moxon was able to somehow score big KO or something like that or whatever. I think that would be, good for the sport in a way. You know what I'm saying? That the young guy who they say is going to be the next Mike Zambides is able to get that victory. But I don't see it happening. I see the better fighter being Mike Zambides. And I see him ending his career with the victory. He's really good with his hands flow. And I'm telling you, because of what I saw from the Robin Van Roosmalen fight, Steve Moxon is slick enough to let those hooks fly by him, like in spots. He's a good fighter. But I definitely lean towards the work rate, the combination flow, the low kicks, the sporadic jumping techniques of Mike Zambides to get a win. Not to mention, I'm sure that Steve Moxon would have to damn near kill him to win a round in his, retirement fight in Greece. So we'll see what happens. Thanks for following the show. God bless everybody. Have a good one. I appreciate all the followers of kickboxing. I'll try to get that next episode, State of the Game, either next week or the week after that. So thanks a lot and have a good one. Peace.